This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
And you are listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. Create your own website or blog with a .com domain name for just $6.95 per month. Go to sqpn.com and click on the Bluehost banner to sign up. And by the Amazon Store. Shop at Amazon by clicking on our Amazon link at sqpn.com, and your purchase will help support our show. Hello and welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, our podcast dedicated to this wonderful ABC series about fairy tales gone wrong, or fairy tales with a twist. And today, joining me for this episode to talk about the whole story of the magical lamp, or the genie in the lamp, I've got three co-hosts. Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Father.
Also joining us, our own Disney expert, Deborah.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, always good to have you on the show as well. And then finally, also joining us, David Hantlows of The Secrets of Tintin. Hey, David.
Hey, Father.
Good to have you on the show, because this is going to be another interesting episode, hopefully. I loved, personally, this particular episode of Once Upon a Time with kind of a blend of several different stories and fairy tales that we all love and know very well, and that made it even more fun to watch this one. And we get to learn a little bit more about the background of certain characters that we were introduced to in previous episodes. So let's start with a short recap of what happened in this episode.
These stories, the classics, there's a reason we all know them. They're a way for us to deal with our world. Well, it doesn't always make sense. Believing in even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
Now, this episode was called Fruit of the Poisonous Tree. Lisa, can you give us a short recap of what happened?
I can. Well, I'll start out in Storybrooke, and we open with the... I think everyone's names, Emma and Henry, at his castle, which was the jungle, the playground. And we find it's been damaged by the storm, and that's where he hides his Once Upon a Time book, and he hides it in a metal box. And while they're there, Regina finds them, and then we discover that she's ordered the castle to be torn down, and in the process, his book goes missing. We, Mary, Margaret, and David, we discover, are having a picnic and going forward with their relationship, and there was no mention of his wife. Sydney, who was ran the newspaper for the Daily Mirror, he comes to Emma and asks her for help in exposing the mayor embezzling money from the city and just her overall meanness to the city. And he tells her that she's embezzling about $50,000 from the city. So Sydney and Emma join up and decide to look through the records. And at first, Emma decides she has to do it all nice and neat and by the law, since she's the sheriff. And Mary Margaret, this is a strange conversation. Mary Margaret is all happy about doing bad things, but for a good reason. And after Sydney and Emma confront Regina and get nowhere, Emma plants a bug in her office. And they listen to her and go follow her to see where she's meeting someone, and Emma's brakes are cut, and Mr. Gold happens upon them and says Regina was coming to meet him to buy land. Emma and Sydney break into the office, Regina's office, and the alarm goes off, and Regina shows up. Emma says she's doing her job. Henry is trying to recreate all the stories when the stranger starts asking him all these questions, and then Henry starts asking him questions. Odd mm-hmm. exchange. Emma and Sydney find blueprints, blah, blah, blah. There's all these pictures. They go to the city council meeting. It's all very detailed. Council meeting where they confront her. And she, of course, pops up with a perfect excuse. She took the money to build a playground that looks like her castle in fairy tale world. And she comes off looking like the good guy. Mr. Gold approaches Emma and says, like, see, I told you so. Don't attack her. And then at the very end of that, we find out that Sydney was really working for Regina the whole time, trying to get Sydney, trying to get Emma and Sydney to be allies so that Sydney could then control what Emma does and report back to Regina, which we all should have seen coming.
I didn't see it coming. I suspected it, but it was still a bit of a surprise.
Oh, I forgot. And then the stranger, we find out the stranger has the fairy tale book.
Yes. Yeah, big reveal. And
then, good. It, the fairy tale world, we start with the genie. We see the genie in the lamp, like Aladdin's genie. And we King picks him up out of the water. Turns out it's the genie of Agrabah, but he suspiciously looks like Mr. Glass, Sydney Glass. And he tells the king to have three wishes. And the king, of course, is too happy and friendly. And he frees the genie and then gives the genie the last wish. And he takes the genie home. We find out it's Snow White's father, who is married to Regina at the time. And the genie and the genie and Regina have this, the evil queen have this, I don't know, like chemistry. Mm-hmm. They're looking at each other, and the king basically degrades Regina in front of the whole kingdom, and the genie feels sorry for her. He gives her a mirror, and then the king asks the genie's help because he finds out through reading the queen's diary that she's in wants the attention and affection of somebody else. So she's locked in the castle. The queen's father comes to the genie and says, give her this box to help her. Well, he does and opens the box, and it's snakes that will, one bite will kill somebody. So she, of course, is going to sacrifice herself and let the snakes bite her. And the genie stops and says, no, I got a better idea. Let's let them bite the king. And so the genie takes the box in and lets the snakes bite the king. And he asks for her forgiveness as he does it, which is very strange. And then he goes back to Regina, and Regina says, they've come. They know it's you because the snakes were from your country. And quick, leave the kingdom. And he says, no, I want to be with you. I love you. And she says, then you find out that this whole thing was an act, that she really just wanted the king dead and she used him. And he gets upset, and he uses that last wish to be with her forever. And all of a sudden, that wish puts him trapped in the mirror. And we realize that's how he became the person in her mirror.
Absolutely.
It was a twisted episode.
It was twisted.
It was pretty brilliant, though. And there were a few moments while watching the episode that I really was stunned. Beginning with the actual appearance of King, what's his name?
Leopold,
being a very well-known actor. And I was like, he's from the West Wing. He's the dude who writes the speeches for the president. It's a one-time appearance, but he did a great job. I thought he was a great, great king. I thought that it was actually just one snake with two heads. Or is that just me?
Oh, well, no, it's two snakes.
Oh, I thought it was a two-headed snake. I was confused.
But then they said that the guard found the snake, so I don't know.
Yeah. I thought, you know, a two-headed snake is actually, you don't really see it. But I was like, why would you have two snakes? One would do the job, unless it's a snake with two heads. And that's kind of part of Egyptian mythology. It's so I was like, okay, that kind of fits the Arabic theme of the main fairy tale in this story. And there are a few details and tidbits and Easter eggs that we will discuss later on. But as usual, what we also try to bring to the forefront in this show, Secrets of Once Upon a Time, is the inspiration that the writers of the series used to write all these different stories. And of course, the big question here is, what is the original fairy tale on which this story was built?
Stories.
Wait a minute. Did I just play that trailer before? I think I did, right?
Yeah, you did.
I was like, that sounds so familiar. Okay, well, let's go straight to Deborah then, because this, of course, has everything to do with a story that has been made very, very popular by Disney, and you being our our Weekly Disney expert, I might as well turn to you to tell us a little bit about the story of Aladdin, actually, I should say.
And the funny thing is that it's really not yet the story of Aladdin. Because we don't see Jasmine, we don't see Aladdin yet.
True.
And to be fair, the idea of the genie comes from Arabian Nights or 101 Nights, which is a collection of tales within a tale that are based in Arabic folklore. And one thing, let me just give the history of 1001 Nights.
Sure.
Because it's an actual very interesting story, because it's about this woman. It's a story of a woman who is being given away in marriage to a tyrannical king who has killed like the last how many other brides before her and rages, you know. When he gets mad, he just kills a bride and marries a new one. So, you know, they're like, well, her father's like, well, it'll be okay. We'll just send you there. So she's very smart. And she's like, well, I'm going to have to make sure he doesn't kill me every night. You know, I'm going to have to come up with some sort of scheme so I don't end up dead. So she ends up telling him a story every night. And through her storytelling, she kind of leaves him. She leaves him hanging every night, basically.
Oh.
She leaves him with these stories. And one of the stories she obviously tells is, well, she tells the story of the Open Sesame story.
Mm-hmm.
And then she also tells the story of Aladdin. And that's the story, I guess, that probably gets the most press, is the Aladdin one. Because that's the story of a street rat. I'm very Disney-fied here. A man, an orphan who's living on the streets in his kingdom, and he has a heart of gold. And then there's the princess who's longing to be free, and the evil Jafar who comes to find the person who can unlock the Cave of Wonders and get the genie who's in the lamp, the magic lamp, out of the Cave of Wonders so he can use it for his own evil devices. Because, you know, obviously when you rub the lamp, the genie can grant you 3 wishes, which is what happens in fairy tale world, is that, you know, the king finds a lamp and voila, here's a genie, he has 3 wishes for you. So that's where the story takes off in, you know, Storybrooke or in the fairy tale world, is the whole idea that if you find a lamp, you rub it, you get 3 wishes.
I think of the original story. I remember reading this as a child. It was one of my favorite fairy tales, even though it wasn't part of the kind of the classic Grimm brothers collection. I thought it were actually 2 genie-generating objects. There was a lamp, and then there was also a ring. And then the lamp was more powerful genie than the ring, but somehow with the ring, Aladdin still manages to save the day and to live forever and happily ever after.
and actually in 1001 Nights, there are a lot of genie stories in there altogether.
So. Well, and it's interesting. I was looking around for information about this whole concept of genie, and it turns out that this is one of the 3 types of creatures that you will find in Arab folklore and also in Islamic teaching. So there's this parallel world to that of mankind. So you've got humans, but in addition to that, you've got the world of, well, let's say the spirits or the spiritual world, and that world has both angels and genies. So these spirits that are described in, they're not very well defined in, at least not in Muslim theology, but apparently they're kind of like a smokeless flame or a scorching fire. And they are a bit like, you know, the equivalent of the fairies. They grant wishes. They can be good, they can be evil, or they can be neutral. And but they seem to be free creatures. They have a free will. And so
yes.
That's how, you know, with that religious background to the spiritual world, that's how it ended up in some of the stories in 1001 Nights.
And actually, the whole mythology around the genie is that it was created by Allah, by God.
Mm-hmm.
And so that he creates the genie out of smoke. And
oh, yeah. And humans were made of clay. And they just like humans, they also were granted a free will, which, of course, is one of the main themes. And we'll talk about that. It's freedom and love and the relationship between the two in this episode.
And it's interesting, just one last reference about the genie is that it's actually genies are mentioned in the Quran. Mm-hmm. Which is the holy book for Islam.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's also, I was reading something on Wikipedia, and I can't seem to find it again. Well, maybe I'm looking in the wrong place, where the Bible kind of alludes to a genie-like creature too, but I don't know which book.
Well, here's a bit on Wikipedia, so take it for what it is. In Judeo-Christian tradition, the word or concept of jinn as such does not occur in the original Hebrew text of the Bible, but the Arabic word jinn is often used in several old Arabic translations. And it is, genie is used as a translation of a familiar spirit in, I guess, and sometimes also for the devil. So I'm not sure if there is a true reference in the Bible to this more Arabic concept of a genie, but well, it's usually what you get when you translate. You try to find words from your culture that are kind of similar to what the biblical text is trying to express. But the whole theme of choices and wishes and what do you really wish for? I mean, that's very prevalent in biblical stories as well. So
there are some wish for.
Yeah.
You know, there's stipulations, obviously.
I love those. I love those because that was always when I read the story of Aladdin, I was like, well, my first wish would be that I could do 100 more wishes. And then the last one of that would be that I could do another 100. And then right at the start, the genie says, well, there are a couple of things that I can't do. You know, it can't be about death, can't be about life, and you cannot wish for more wishes. Like, oh, no. That's too bad.
Legal disclaimer, void where prohibited. And
and that was funny. Well, that's what he told him up front.
And Aladdin, the Disney cartoon, it was like, and I can't raise people from the dead, and I can't make you fall in love. Or I can't make people fall in love with him.
Yes.
But did you notice the genie also gave him the warning that wishes always come back to bite you?
Yes.
He said, I'll never use my wish because, you know, it never works out for good. And that reminded me so much of, Rumpelstiltskin, you know, talking about magic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's magic always that. The price. I'm sorry.
The price of magic, yes. And also that for every wish, you have to pay a price. That is, it's the same theme.
And I was always brought up with the saying, be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Exactly. And of course, the genie didn't heed his own advice. But
well, and I think, and we're slowly moving towards our thematic analysis of this episode. But I think it's the core theme here the main question is, indeed, be careful what you wish for, because very often we wish for things that are not really essential. And so we mistake the ultimate good for some temporal material good, and oftentimes our wishes are motivated by our egotism and our, you know, our own narrow view on what would be good for us, and so that usually carries consequences. Whereas the beauty of this episode is that once the genie gets his freedom back from the king, he expresses his true desire, which is to find true love, and I totally love that answer or that statement from him, because that is truly our deepest wish. It's the most important wish of our life. We are made for nothing else but true love. And as long as we haven't found it, we keep searching for it. We are, you know, there's nothing else that can replace that. And I thought it was a beautiful kind of like a story thread in this episode that came back all the time with all the characters. It's like, what do you wish for? What are you really searching for? What's your ultimate desire? And then, of course, even the genie makes the wrong choice in the end, and thinks he is choosing for true love, or wishing actually for true love to be there, and it's not mm-hmm. there. You know, everything is it's obvious that the true love is not there, and he can't make Regina love him, and so he chooses kind of second best, which is to be with her, and then that turns into disaster.
Genie stalking. That's what he turns into.
Yeah. Regina Stalker.
Oh my goodness.
But this episode kept you guessing because you watch them making again. You know, it's so funny because so many of the episodes about choices. I mean, choices is a constant theme here.
Yes.
And then usually they're making good choices or choices for good. And in this episode, it seemed like most of the characters were making bad choices.
Yes. It's also what a lot of the feedback on the web that I read in forums and on Twitter, a lot of the fans of the series were a bit disappointed that Emma made the wrong choice. That she got entangled, as Rumpelstiltskin tells her, or Mr. Gold, there is an emotional entanglement which prevents her from making the right choices. And so instead of seeing that she's being lied to, which, remember, that was supposed to be her superpower, that she could always tell if someone was lying, she totally misses that with Sydney. And so you can wonder, is that just bad writing, or is it on purpose that she can't see it because she's no longer thinking clearly? She's confused by her, you know, the emotions and her love for Henry and her desire to protect him, and it just it clouds her judgment. I like it if the main character is not perfect and is kind of gray, because we all are gray, and so why wouldn't Emma have some flaws? I think
you see her stumble a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. And that'll make her vulnerable, which will also possibly, you know, involve other people to help her repair what was done, and so perhaps she needs Mr. Gold more than she wants to, you know, because he's offering his help. And then she's like, no, I don't need your help. And then, well, one can wish. I just love
these
little
quirks.
For
someone to trust. She's looking for an ally, but she just, you know, Mr. Gold keeps putting himself out there, but she can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
When he said one can wish, I wondered if that was kind of a reference to Sidney Glass, if he actually, you know, because if Gold actually remembers the old world, he probably knows that guy's the genie.
Mm-hmm. But he wouldn't have power over him because the genie, you know, has his freedom back. So there's nothing else in the lamp. That's, I think, why the lamp ends up in his pawn shop, because it's you know, it's worthless anyway.
Well, and have you noticed that the genie, after he uses his real one wish, he doesn't really have any other power left. That's pretty much it.
He's just kind of
mortal at that point, it seems.
A mere stalker mortal.
A mere stalker, exactly. Then he's more human-like. He takes on more human characteristics.
I didn't notice that, but wouldn't surprise me. Because probably his power as a genie was given to him the moment he got imprisoned in that lamp. And we don't know the backstory of that, how he ended up in that lamp, but something must have gone wrong in his life because he didn't want to be there. And when the king picks up the lamp, which I thought was a brilliant scene, where you see the, you know, the huge face peering through the little holes in the, I was like, well, where's this guy actually? What is this room that he is in? And then you realize he's inside the lamp, like literally,
well,
like
the genie kind of had this look like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, here we go again. So it's he's been doing this for thousands of years, or at least thousands of stories.
Yeah.
So the big theme in this episode is the choices that you make, and are you always making the right choice for what's really good, or do you sometimes choose the more direct gratification or direct results, and that is where you stumble, and that's exactly what goes wrong in Emma's case when she that's where she becomes vulnerable. She wants immediate results. Instead of having patience and wait for evil to expose itself, she wants to basically jump over the process and breaking the law herself. And there's this interesting moral question, and it's, I think it is both Sydney and Snow White telling Emma in the apartment of Snow White, well, hey, sometimes doing a bad thing for a good reason is okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, a very flawed moral reasoning, because that's the beginning of the end. You know, you can never obtain a truly morally correct result on the basis of something that is intrinsically evil. It's like, you know, can you kill someone to prevent that person from killing other people? Well, you know, you've got the whole discussion about, you know, the just war, and sometimes you have to prevent. So would it be a sin to kill Hitler, you know, to prevent him from killing so many other people? But it's a very slippery slope, and in ethics they will always warn for such a reasoning. Evil should be avoided always, and if you use evil to obtain something good, it might actually bite you, because it will lead to more evil.
Can I? You just reminded me of a conversation I had with my students yesterday. I teach an adult learning class, theories of adult learning. Mm-hmm. And we always talk about experience being the best teacher. And I said, well, you know, now that you're older, because there are some older students in there, you know, is it our place to tell people and to hurry up and tell them, hey, you're doing it wrong? Or is it better to let people learn through experience? And I think Emma was jumping the gun a little, because she's like, oh, wait, I'm gonna enlighten everybody. But it just was too soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you think about it, the genie did the same thing. Rather than finding out really what was going on, he just was in a hurry. I'm in love. This is how it is. Let's just do this, you know, so that we can be together. Rather than figuring out what was really going on, taking a moment. And I had a question about that. I think I was taken in by Regina's acting here. Because I was thinking, really? She was nice? What led her to become the evil queen then, you know?
Well, that's interesting, because this story seems to tell you, finally give you the answer to what is her beef with Snow White, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, and why she is so evil. Well, you know, it's basically Snow White's true father saying, you're the fairest of them all, and then Descartes basically saying that in front of her. That's extremely hurtful, but it turns out that she is already evil, and she wanted to get rid of the king long before he said that. So there has to be something else.
He sat there and praised her dead mother, about how wonderful she was, and was like, can't be with her, I can be with you. And you see Regina sitting there, and you're like, oh, is this what's going to turn her evil? And then you find out, no.
not that those words weren't hurtful, but she was already.
Right.
Oh, the words were terrible. And the king.
I find that interesting that the king was so, I'm so happy, the world is so great, I don't need wishes. He seems like such a good guy, you know?
Yes.
And then he gets there and says that in front of his wife, which I thought was really, you know, callous and horrible.
And then
he reads her diary and he's like, what's going on? I need to, I'm a locker in her castle. And it just, I don't know. Did they, so what was he? You know, what kind of person was he really?
Yeah, you'd think he's very naive, but then again, it's the what's his name? Schiff, the actor, doesn't play him as a total, you know, nutcase. He actually seems to be a very good king. We'll talk about his name later on, but at first you get the impression that this is the perfect king. Generous, you know, not egotistic at all. But in the end, he realizes, I shouldn't have wished for anything at all. Not even, you know, I shouldn't even have touched that lamp. Because even though I wished for the genie to have his own freedom, it still turned out to be in my, you know, to my demise, which is very, very tragic. But yes, indeed, the king wasn't a good king. Well, what about Regina's father? He seems to be a very dubious character all of a sudden, because he brings in the snake.
And did you love that he said, I would
yes,
die for
yeah,
her?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I immediately put that in my notes, you know. They won't allow me in her chambers. They know I die for her. How true is that? But that also explains why he is going along with Regina's evil plan. It's not because he himself is very evil. He just loves her to death, and so he will do that too.
Yeah. Kind of like the genie. He's blind to follow her.
Yeah.
This blind devotion.
Love and that kind of devotion has made him blind for a good proper moral assessment, which is the problem of almost all the characters, except of course for Henry, who's always you know, the perfect boy. And interesting of course revelation towards the end that the storybook, the fairy tale book, was not taken by Regina, but by the stranger. And we see him twice here, and we still don't have a clue who he is, what his purpose is. There are a few details, or I think it's an Easter egg. We'll talk about that later on. That might give us a little bit of a clue. And we've got some interesting speculation about his character as well from one of our listeners. But for now, it's kind of strange to, you know, his role is not very fleshed out. And there was a little bit of a parallelism, I thought, in the story between the illegitimate relationship between Regina and Sydney, or, well, in this case, the genie, and, of course, Snow White, and Mary Margaret, and Prince Charming, David. Was his name David in the real world? I always get confused. Or is it?
Yes,
it's David in the real world. James in
There you go.
James in Fairy Tale World.
Although, of course, I'm not sure if they put in that parallel on purpose, or whether it was just, you know, just to remind us and to remind people that might not be listening to every podcast about the show of that relationship is there. You know, that there is still this mm-hmm. thing going on because they need it later on. But there too, it's like, yeah, is this relationship going anywhere, or is it doomed to fail? And in a way, Snow White is making the same moral mistake as her stepmother. Well, although with Regina, it was on purpose. But you think it's just happening to her. Hey, did you notice the final conversation between Regina and Sydney when we get the reveal that he was actually working for her all along? She takes an apple from the tray on the table. And that's when they talk about the whole deception going on. And I thought that was a very, very interesting play here on the whole theme of biting and being bitten. And so it's like, of course, the Snow White is supposed to die because she takes a bite of the apple. Regina wants Emma to. Do you say that as an expression in English? To bite to take a bite of that whole setup. Mm-hmm. In Dutch, you say she's biting. She's actually
take the bait.
Take the bait. There you go. Yeah. Take the bait. And then of course you got the snakes that will kill by just one single bite. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was, you know, it's all around that same theme, which I think ultimately, and I've gone at length into this whole underlying inspiration for a lot of the stories in this series is the whole story of the, you know, Adam and Eve taking a bite of the apple and thereby making the wrong choice and not choosing for what their true desire is, you know, not choosing true love, which is ultimately God, but to choose something else instead, and to fall for this. And let's not forget the snake here too. It's again, you've got the apple, you've got the snake elements already present in this first wonderful story of Genesis. So that was, I think, on purpose. Let's see. I was wondering if the whole the episode with where the brakes are sabotaged. I was wondering is that just, you know, therefore for it so that the car crashes, or is it also symbolic? Is it like that? Well, once you go down the path of, you know, making the wrong choices, it's going to end in a disaster. There are no brakes, there are no boundaries anymore, and so you'll end up crashing. Or perhaps I'm just overreaching.
No, I think that you have a good point there, and I'm mulling that over. But it's the whole idea of is it once we've made that mistake, can we go back and fix it?
Yes. Yeah. I guess so. It's never.
Is it never too late?
It's never too late, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the question everybody asks at some point in their life is it too late to go back and fix things?
Well, I think that the writers are leading us towards this idea that despite what Regina wants, and that is Storybrooke is fixed once and for all. There is no future. There is no salvation. There is no redemption. That Emma, as a character, is the one who brings hope back to the story. So that every character, no matter how deep they have been falling by their wrong choices in the past, they might still be saved. There might still be a future for everyone in Storybrooke. So that's kind of what I think. So even for the for Sydney, there might be a future. Who knows?
It's funny. I just read a thing posted on Pinterest or whatever that new website is, and somebody put on Pinterest. I'm totally addicted to that. But somebody had put a little poster. I think it was Sister Mary Kaiser, who's a sister in Nebraska, had put every saint has a past. And every sinner has a future.
Oh, I love that.
And maybe that's kind of what you're talking about is...
That's what I hope. I hope the story will show that. That even the worst person in this story can have redemption, provided, of course, that they choose to do the right thing and to repair what they destroyed. But in some cases, especially death, of course, that's kind of irreversible.
Yeah, well,
that poor King Leopold. I just hope to see more of him because I just love the actor. I think he's amazing.
Well, and the part they didn't address in the story is why did he marry Regina?
Yes, indeed.
You know, if she's such a queen, you know, I mean, at first I thought, oh, well, maybe she was really sweet. You know, they had her, you know, dressed in that white fur and she looked so demure,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, okay, maybe she came to be evil.
Well, could it be?
And you realize she wasn't. And you think, well, you know, so what brought them together? If he was still mourning and in love with his dead wife, why did he marry her?
Well, what if that too is part of Regina's plan and she just seduced him? He needed a wife. Snow White needed a mother. And so, and she is very good at pretending that she's innocent. I mean, we've seen that all throughout the episode. You know, I'm a good person.
There's the musical Evita, the story of Eva Perón. And they make reference to the fact that she just, it was all of the relationships she had was all manipulative and for her own interest. So it's not too far off that she would be, she'd pretend to be something she's not just to get basically the highest seat in the land, the queen.
Yes.
So aspirations for anything to get the, you know, the place of most power wouldn't, you know, you ask your question of, would you be willing to do anything and including changing the person you are temporarily to get that power?
I think she has had her eyes on the throne since forever, and Snow White probably took that away from her by, you know, with her marriage with Prince Charming, and that jeopardized her own grab for power. But again, we still need to see why she acts the way she acts like this. how did this happen?
My theory is she's just a psychopath. She was born that way.
That would be a cop out. I wouldn't like that at all. Well, let's move to our next segment, and that's our part where we go into detail about, you know, all the names that are in the story.
Do you think we need code names?
Is it Cobra our code name?
That's the mission. I mean, us. I need something to call you.
Oh, I don't, you can just call me Emma for now.
Okay, well then, we'll see you later, Emma.
So we've got a few names here in this episode. The first character that we're introduced to, of course, is King Leopold. And that is originally a Germanic name, consisting of two Latin words, Leo, which means lion, and then the Pold is actually, that's not Latin, the second part, it's Germanic, and it means brave or bold. So it's, the name originally means something like brave as a lion. And Leopold, of course, is used a lot by dukes, and there are some saints that are called like that, and kings. And so it's a name that is not uncommon in the fairy tale world as well. I don't know if there's anything more to that name other than that a lion, of course, is a noble animal, sometimes used as a symbol for Christ as well. And so definitely in the beginning of the episode where he is giving the genie his freedom back, he acts very, well, very, very regally and with a huge... How would you say? He has no second agenda, and so in that way, it's kind of fitting with the name. But there is also, of course, the second character that we meet in the beginning is the genie. And Deborah, if I'm not mistaken, you have some background information about that.
Yes. Well, gene, as in J-I-N-N-E, is Arabic for hidden.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then, but we morphed it into G-E-N-I-E, genie, as the way when we talk about genies in American culture. That actually is from a Latin root, which means genius. You know, so how it morphed, I have no idea. But to go from hidden to genius, you know, go figure.
Hmm. Interesting. I love that one. Conversation between the king Leopold and the genie, and it's like the genie has his freedom back, and then he's like, so what's next, you know, what to do now? And the king says, I don't know, you're the genie. I love that. Very clever writing. And then the third name that I don't think we've ever discussed is, of course, Sydney. Sydney there are two explanations for this name. One is it is actually from a place in somewhere in, I don't know, in England. It would mean at the wide island or near the water, a water meadow or something like that. So it would be from Sidon Ige. The second theory, not as likely as the first one, is that it is a contraction of the French place name Saint-Denis. And Saint-Denis was the, or Denis, was the patron saint, one of the patron saints of France. And the Normans originally brought that name to England. So it would be a contraction, like Saint-Denis and then Sydney. Of course, there's not much to. I mean, the Saint Dionysius, I think, is the Latin name for that saint. He's often depicted holding his head in his hands, supported by angels, with a demon and an axe below. And according to legend, he carried his severed head to the peak of Montmartre, which is this wonderful like island in the near the coast of Normandy, on which you have this beautiful, you know, city on top of that hill in the middle of the sea.
Can I give you a wild speculation to his
sure,
name?
Sure.
If you switch the D and the S, it spells Disney.
You're right.
That's so funny.
That is too funny. That might actually be the most obvious explanation.
Well, I was thinking, you know, because like in Fantasia, Yinsed, who is the name of the wizard in that, is actually Disney spelled backwards.
Oh,
so they've
course.
Been known to do that.
Too funny. I was thinking, I was trying to find an explanation of why he would be called Sydney. And on Wikipedia, I found that Sydney became widely used as a given name in English-speaking countries during the 19th century, with much of its use in the United States after the American Revolution, being due to admiration for Algernon Sydney, a 17th century martyr to royal tyranny. I was like, okay, martyr to royal tyranny. That would fit the role of or what happens to the genie. But I actually like your theory more. It's just Disney spelled differently. Fantastic. Well,
that's funny.
I don't have any other names for right now.
The only other thing I didn't notice, but Regina is her name in both worlds. She is Regina in the fairy tale world and in the real world, which I guess makes sense since she created the curse and she appears to know what's going on in both worlds. You know, so why? Yes. What did you say, Deborah, earlier? Why rename yourself?
Yeah, why bother?
Well, and she, you know, she doesn't need a new identity. She knows exactly who she is. And Regina, we've discussed this before, means queen, so.
Right. Makes sense. It makes sense in both worlds.
Yes. And that she's evil doesn't need to be in the name. It's pretty obvious.
Think about this is that if you have two identities, isn't it hard to continually keep track of who you tell what to and what identity goes with what character? I would change characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, oh yes, that's my evil queen days. Sorry, wrong persona.
Well, she is acting in this very same deceiving way as she is in the fairy tale world. I mean, she's deceiving everyone, pretending that she's just a good person building this playground for the children. Whereas, of course, her original goal was to destroy this castle, which was kind of the symbol, I think, of Henry's. It was Henry's safe place. It was his castle, and she didn't know about. And now she forces Henry to play in her castle. Mm-hmm, so it's all a play, a power play, and she's deceiving everyone, just as she did when she was married to poor King Leopold.
Well, and this episode, I think, was the first time we saw her in fairy tale world be anything except obviously evil. I mean, in every other episode, she's been blatantly, I'm the evil queen, I will destroy you, you know, do what I say or else. And in this one, we saw her using manipulation and, you know, pretending to be somebody else. And so for me, it made her... in the real world, you could see it more. Because I was having a real hard time with watching her in Storybrooke thinking, she remembers everything and yet she acts completely different. Mm-hmm. And instead in this one we saw, well, they really aren't that far apart, because in Storybrooke she's, you know, kind of that double persona. She's not as blatant about her evilness, you know, and what she's doing to control people. And that's how she used to be in a fairy tale world too. She was underhanded. You know, and how she got her way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, let's see what our listeners have to say about this episode.
I wish, but nothing changes. I wish I was better at wishing.
It's interesting, by the way, playing this jingle, that the whole theme of wishing was already part of one of the first episodes of this season. I wish I was better at wishes. I think that King Leopold also thought the same at the end of the story.
Him and the genie.
Yes, indeed. So we got some feedback from one of our listeners, Daniel. And he has some comments both on our previous episodes and on this one, or at least the story of the TV show. Let me just read what he writes. Great episode, as always. Apparently, he has seen already the trailer for Valentine's Day episode. So we'll look at that trailer later on at the end of this show. Secondly, he disagrees with me. And also took the apes taking over reference as from Planet of the Apes. And then David should have just thrown in a line like, it's a madhouse, and it would have sealed the deal. Because I think that David came up with that Planet of the Apes reference. I'm still not convinced. I don't know. Thirdly, Daniel loves how they combined characters. The genie and the lamps, also the magical mirror. I totally concur. That was a brilliant twist that I didn't expect. And then lastly, he writes, did you say that Snow helped Red? If that's the case, I think we'll see Snow's huntsman again. Daniel thinks that Snow's and Red's huntsman are the same character. He only died in Storybrooke, so not in Storyland. So we might still see the huntsman back. I think the actor who played the huntsman, I forgot his name, is still very popular among fans. So yeah, I think it makes sense if it's the same guy. somehow.
A lot of people are really distraught that they got rid of him so early in the series. So that would be a nice twist to bring him back in fairy tale world.
You know, I almost felt like the stranger was kind of a way for the writers to make up for it, because he looks a bit like the Huntsman. It's kind of the same type of guy, you know, same age, same beard, same look.
Yeah. Kind of scraggly.
And then Daniel also has a prediction, and this has to do with our current discussion. So here's his prediction. Regina is feigning ignorance as to who the motorcycling typist is, as we see in the trailer. He has the storybook. I'm not sure if he's referring to this episode or the trailer for Valentine's Day episode. I think she called him in with the old magical typewriter to make a few edits and change the ending. Try to edit Emma out of existence, maybe. No savior, no happy ending. I think that's a very interesting theory.
Mm-hmm. Can I say something? And this
sure.
is just something. While that little tiny scene where you see Henry in the coffee shop and here comes the writer, did you notice he's pressing Henry for details of the story and how it ends?
No, I wasn't paying attention enough. Uh-uh.
So, you know, we know he has the storybook, but, you know, we know that Emma ripped out the last couple pages.
Indeed.
Right,
and they were
burned. Them, didn't they?
Yeah. So he's pressing Henry, like, how does this end? You know, maybe he's trying to rewrite this ending.
That has to be something like that.
If he's asking about it, then he didn't write it originally.
No. Mm-hmm. So he's not the writer of the book. But he might be the one who completes it or who changes the story.
Maybe.
I love that. And of course, there's some guessing as to why he's really there, because Henry doesn't buy it at all. Henry's gut feeling, I think, is it's an imposter, or he's a bad guy, or he's dangerous, or there is no trust there. And he's like, you're not here to just write a story. You can write that anywhere. And then he's like, well, I'm here for stuff. So you know that there's more going on there. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I have feedback from somebody on Facebook who's a friend of mine.
Okay, go ahead.
Who loves the show, by the way. Michelle Forbes, who started out as a fan of Farmville, who's still my Farmville friend. she messaged me and said she loves the show, but her theory is, and this is a weird theory, and I'm not so sure I like it yet, but I will definitely spit it out. She thinks that the stranger is actually Henry grown up.
Oh.
Huh.
That's interesting.
Oh, wow. Like a time warp
can't
thingy.
Can't remember what the end was since they destroyed it.
Right, and maybe I'm trying to figure out where that would happen or how that would happen or...
Wow. that's a pretty outrageous theory, but, you know...
Hey.
Not impossible.
These people did work on Lost.
Yes, indeed. That's what I was thinking. Henry from the future.
I made it back just in time for you to make my head hurt.
Okay.
Well, I was like, that's just trippy to think of it that way.
I love the outrageous theories, though, because you just don't know. I mean, you don't know. They could do something completely mundane.
But how cool would that be? Because we see Henry write. He is a writer. He writes down the stories. And then this guy, this mysterious stranger, is also a writer. And that could explain why he is actually not imprisoned in Storybrooke. Because he's like Henry. I need more proof. I need more. Yeah, we need to put some detectives on this. Because we need more indications that this could be a valid theory. Right now it's just it could be, but why, on what do you base this? So if we have any listeners who know a little bit more, who've seen some stuff that could indicate this, that this would be something, I don't know, I guess we'll discover this soon who he is. I mean, they can't keep this they can't leave us without an answer for too long.
You know what's funny is usually you can go to Internet Movie Database and they'll, you know, see the characters' names.
Yeah, not here.
Oh, he's still listed as stranger.
Yes, yes.
Oh, no.
Which makes me wonder, how long are they going to hide it?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I'm happy they're doing it because I don't really want it to be spoiled. But
And everybody seems to be a bit ambivalent as to his, you know, the meaning of his being, him being there. I mean, Regina is wondering, and she's not sure. Mm-hmm. Emma is not sure. She doesn't know who he really is. Even Henry is now kind of like, yeah, who is this guy?
Think about it. From Regina, there should be nobody in that town that she doesn't know.
True, true. It's a danger for her power.
That's right. She controls everything. She, you know, created the town in theory, you know, with the curse. So that's got to really bother her.
Yes.
That there's somebody that she doesn't know and she can't control.
Absolutely. She's all about control and total absence of freedom, which, again, is something that freedom is one of the major themes, not just of this episode, but also of the other episodes. Freedom creates future, creates choices, creates the potential for forgiveness and redemption. I want to move over to our next segment.
Set of rules in his head on how everything works.
Who has a set of rules? David? I miss what you said.
Well, I mean, Henry has a whole set of rules on how everything works. Emma can leave. No one else can. There should be no one else new. Mm-hmm. So this is really threatening, like, the way he understands the world to work.
Well, and he bases his knowledge on the stories that he's read. I mean, that's literally his Bible. It's you know, and things seem to change now. So it unsettles him. He no longer really, things are not going according to the book, literally. Oh wow, that's another theme, by the way. Want to do things by the book? That's definitely a double entendre here. It's the what book is she talking about? Of course, morally, it's kind of an expression. You want to do things by the rules, but it's also the rules of the original storybook. And the book is no longer there. So who is determining? Who is now in control of the rules? Isn't that the stranger? Because he has the storybook, so he can change it. Ooh. Well, I want to move over to our segment about details and Easter eggs, things that you might have missed. And perhaps together we can find a few of those little tidbits.
Glass.
Every story needs a memorable detail.
Well, this story had a few memorable details, not as many as in other previous episodes. It seems to be kind of on and off. Sometimes just every scene is littered with background details. Not that many in this one, but I still managed to notice a few things, and I'm curious to see if you've noticed them as well. First of all, the stranger that we see when he's in the coffee shop with Henry, you can see that he has a strange thing around his neck. Actually, he carries two things around his neck. One is something that looks like a claw or a sharp tooth. And at the end of the episode, I was even wondering, could this be a snake's tooth, like with poison in it? That's one symbol that he carries around his neck. And then the other symbol, strangely enough, is a cross. And in the second scene where he opens the book, you only see the cross around his neck, and I don't see the tooth anymore. I was like, that is an interesting, almost kind of two opposite symbols. It's the symbol of the snake, of danger, of sin, of seduction, of poison, and then on the other hand, it's the cross. It's a symbol of salvation, of, you know, symbol of Christ. So snake versus Christ. Pretty big opposition there. So again, and it's I think they did that on purpose to stress that this is an ambivalent person. We don't know yet if he's more like a snake or more like Christ, you know, if he's a savior or if he's a seducer. I love that little detail. The playground that the queen is building, I think, is based on her castle, isn't it? Is that tulip-shaped castle? I thought it was interesting. Of course, we've got the apple tree in the magical garden again. Or apparently, this is part of a lot of myths and fairy tales, or this whole idea of an enchanted garden and to have magical trees in there. So I didn't do any more research, but it would be interesting to dive into that in a future episode. But we see the same apple tree as the one that we see in Regina's backyard.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was nice that they told you where it came from, that it was hers growing up. And so she's always had this attraction to apple. I mean, it's always been part of her. And I still wouldn't eat any apple that she gave me. Sorry.
No. Well, and it's interesting that the genie cuts off a piece of the apple with his knife, and he's about to eat it when, you know, Regina's father arrives.
So we've never seen anyone eat of her apples. They're
not
always
yet.
Stuck right before they do it.
Well, of course, the pilot episode starts with Snow White in a coffin, so we can assume that she has finally bitten, taken a bite of the apple.
And then Hansel and Gretel got that apple from the blind witch for
her. True. We still need to see how that happened, though. Perhaps it's going to be part of the final episode, the cliffhanger of this season. It could be that we're going back to how Snow White finally got beaten by the evil queen with the apple. Who knows? I already mentioned that the snake or the snakes, I still don't know exactly. I have to go back and freeze frame, but I really thought it was a two-headed snake. And if so, it's kind of a magical creature, and it is two-headed monsters, of course, are part of a lot of fairy tales. In Egyptian mythology, the snake is called the two-headed snake is called Nehepkau or Nehepka, and it had a very specific meaning. It was the cause of the binding of Ka and Ba after death. I have no idea what Ka and Ba are. that's in an other article. Let me look that up real quick on Wikipedia. But the snake, the two-headed snake, was said to be one of the guards of the entrance to the underworld. So it's where you go after death. And so in this case, it would be one of those guardian characters, like, remember the three-headed dog in Harry Potter, the first Harry Potter story? It's kind of similar. It's like a watchdog. Most of the time, these multi-headed monsters kind of guard the transition between this world and the afterlife or the underworld. Let me see. I've got the Ba. Oh, the Ba and the Ka in Egyptian mythology mean the Ba stands for soul and then Ka for vital spark. So I imagine it's the soul and then the life-giving principle. I think in Hebrew theology, you'd probably translate that with, well, you've got the soul, but then you've got the ruach. You've got the spirit of God himself, God's breathing life into our souls. And so those two get separated, the soul and the life-giving principle. And in somehow, you know, in death, these are reunited in the underworld, I guess. Just speculating here. But and then the snake had a name, and I just couldn't really figure out what it was. Tried to write it down, and it's like I don't have any subtitles in the version that I watched, so I...
They called it the something of Agrabah, which is
the snake of Agrabah, or the viper of Agrabah.
It was the Agrabah vipers. Yeah.
So could Agrabah just be the...
He was from.
It's probably the country. By the way, I forgot to say that originally the earliest version that we know of the tale of Aladdin was actually apparently taking place, according to the Arab storytellers, in China. But it was a very Arab Muslim version of China. And so it's very interesting that Aladdin actually is supposed to be Chinese. Not that Disney followed that idea, because they were probably already, you know, producing Mulan. So.
Oh yeah,
I just thought it was funny. They actually used the word Agrabah because that was exactly where the Aladdin Disney movie was from.
Okay, that makes sense. So I missed that. It's been a long time since I watched that movie. We should definitely talk about Aladdin in one of our episodes of Secrets of Disney.
Mm-hmm. That's always one of my favorite Disney shows.
It is absolutely great. Yes. And
I had a friend who just... Oh, sorry.
Oh, by the way, in the Disney version of Aladdin, it's actually the Disney story that introduced this whole theme of the genie trying to become free again, to get his freedom back. It's not part. That's not part of the original Aladdin story. So it's another idea that they took from the Disney-fied version of Aladdin here in this episode. Go ahead.
I had a friend who just sent me a message that said she thinks the stranger is one of the Brothers Grimm.
Could be, yeah.
Which,
yeah.
I don't know if they would do that because of NBC show. I don't know.
Could it be Hans Christian Andersen?
Part of fairy tales.
But could it be Hans Christian Andersen instead?
True.
Could be any fairy tale narrator.
Yeah. Hmm. And then my other thing was, I absolutely love the spot where Emma and Sydney are in Regina's office, and she holds up the keys.
Yes. Oh, yes.
All of
yes.
the cards. It goes, yes. I wonder what these are for. And you're going, ah, you know. And she just puts them down. And I was waiting for Sydney to go like, I wonder, and like tell her something. But
well, the key has a skull on it. So it's a symbol of death. So are these the keys to these boxes that we saw with all the hearts in them?
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought it was too.
I was thinking something else. And it could be related. It could be I was thinking about the thieves, the 40 thieves in the story. Isn't that part of the Aladdin story?
That's one of the, is it? No, it's,
Ali, oh no, that's Alibaba.
That's Alibaba. The 40 thieves. But it's still part of the same, you know, overall book, which is Arabian Nights.
I should freeze frame and count the keys, but if there are 40 keys, and there are 40 boxes with hearts in them. Could that be connected to the Alibaba story? I don't know.
Now I'm going to have to go read.
Speculating.
Yeah, again.
I didn't go beyond this, but let's see. Were there any other details that we need to talk about? I'm just looking through my notes here.
I didn't see anything as much in this because they didn't go into Gold Shop, which is where I find most of my details.
Especially
for Disney related issues. You know, I'm all about the Disney, you know, the hidden Mickeys, but I didn't really capture any hidden Mickeys this episode, and maybe I wasn't looking hard enough. But
I noticed a few more details that I wrote down. The Volkswagen that Emma is driving now has a big dent in her car in the side of it. And I was like, was that there before? Did we see how that happened? It's almost as if someone crashed into her car.
Well, didn't she crash on the way out of town that one time with the saw the wolf?
But yeah, the wolf stopped her, and that car has been dinged up ever since.
Okay.
That car is about as old as I am. So.
I just didn't notice. Didn't notice the prominence of this dent before. We see the return of the walkie-talkies, of course, that they use to communicate. Poor Henry.
And did you notice when they tape recorded her, Sydney Glass had like this old tape recorder?
Yes, yeah.
It was like, I'm sure there are probably young people watching going, what is that?
Yes, yes. I saw a great cartoon on Facebook the other day where you see this tape recorder talking to an iPad saying, I am your father. And then the iPod goes, no! That's my Star Wars reference of the day. Another detail I thought was, again, I don't know if it was on purpose, but when at the end, when Emma meets Sydney in the bar, they both drink a beer, but the beer looks terrible. It's completely flat. There's no foam on it. And it's almost symbolic of their, you know, of the story. It's like it fell flat for both of them. There is just no taste to it at all.
Actually, that is one of the things when I serve alcohol, they're always like, make sure you get the foam off of there.
Really? So, oh, that's
yeah,
how
I'm
they
sorry,
serve?
That's an American thing.
Wow. That would be a mortal sin in Europe to serve
that. I pour beer regularly at one of my other jobs that I have, and we have to pour it in such a way that it is not foamy.
You're kidding me.
No.
Oh,
no, it's considered pretty. You're supposed to have no
foam on
top.
People don't
want to
pay for foam.
Oh, you Americans. Come on. You take away the foam. You take away the essence of the beer. It's supposed to have foam.
But Americans want quantity and not
quality.
Well, yeah.
It's all about We got to make sure that there's liquid in there and not foam.
Oh, my goodness. Foam is part of the experience. Oh, well. So it's probably not symbolic then. And then interesting that the queen, the evil queen, tells the genie, I have arranged for a boat that will give you safe passage out of the kingdom. And I was like, there's the boat again. We've seen the boat also when I think Snow White talks to Rumple. And she's in a boat, so there's talk about the boat. And we've talked about the symbolism of the boat. It's like, again, you find this in Egyptian mythology, the river Styx and the boat that brings you to the other side. You see it in gospel stories where the boat also has a very important function. It's like going from this side to the other side, but it's also, you know, the boat is able to move over water that's the symbol of death, and so it's also a symbol of our transition from this life to another life, etc., etc. So it's interesting, and we know now, of course, that Storybrooke is near the sea, or at least near a lake. I still don't know exactly where Storybrooke is supposed to be, whether that's the Atlantic Ocean or whether it's, you know, one of the big lakes.
I don't know. When they showed the weather map, the last one, I'm not familiar. I'm from Texas, and you know, we just focus on Texas down here. So they showed the northeast coastline where they're supposed to be in Maine, but I'm not familiar enough with up there to know.
So it would be Maine. So it's probably just going to be
I figured where Massachusetts was. I saw Maine, but other than that, I don't know.
Okay,
I can tell you where things are here.
Well, that brings us, I think, to our final element of the show, and that is looking ahead to the next episode. And for the people that are listening to us while the show is airing in the United States, and I know that we also have a lot of listeners that listen to these shows much later, much longer after we recorded this, because this series has just started in the UK. So they've just started to discover what a wonderful series this is. And I don't think it Well, actually, I think it was. It's going to start in the Netherlands as well. So anyway, but for the American audience, it's going to be a bit of a pause. Next week there will be no new episode because of the Super Bowl. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so there will be lots of beer without foam during that weekend, I suppose. And then the next episode 12 will be aired around Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's episode 12. The title of the episode is Skin Deep. And here is the sound of the trailer.
A beauty, a beast, the legendary love story with a twist.
Something evil has taken root in you.
True love's kiss will break any curse.
It's different when the beast...
No one can ever love me!
...truly is... Monster.
I'm a difficult man to love.
Lost's Emily DeRaven guest stars. ABC's Once Upon a Time. All new Sunday, February 12th, 8, 7 Central.
Lost fans rejoice. One of their favorite actors is joining the show. Okay, let's wrap this up. Your final predictions as to the continuation of this story. David, let me start with you. What do you think is going to happen?
This is going to bring us...
Oh, I think you're Skyping out a little bit.
Further actors.
Try it again, David, because you Skyped out.
I think this is going to bring us further down the path of him being a tragic character more than an evil one.
Okay. Something tragic. He's very violent in this promo. At least we're led to believe that he's killing someone. So
I'm not saying he's not going to do something wrong, but they keep painting him in very gray tones. They're dark gray, but they keep painting him in gray tones, and I think they're going to keep doing that.
Well, and the story of the Beauty and the Beast, which of course this episode is referring to, is a story of redemption and of someone who has been turned into a beast and then finds true love and actually is saved. Well, Deborah, that's totally your cup of tea. No pun intended.
Great.
Your predictions.
I really don't have any predictions right now. And mostly because I have to admit I looked at the spoilers and I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay. Do you think we'll see Dancing China?
No, but it would be interesting if we did see like Cogsworth and Lumiere and you know, those characters taking up residence and you know, fairy tale world or in Storybrooke. That would be interesting. You're right.
I think in one of the scenes taking place in his pawn shop, we actually do see some china and a candle that may or may not refer to the characters in Beauty and the Beast, the Disney version, that is.
Version, yes, with the dancing plates, yes.
Yeah.
Well, even in the original version of the fairy tale, wasn't the entire castle enchanted as well?
Oh, could be. Yeah.
I'll have to do a little more research on that, but I could have sworn that the entire castle was enchanted in the original fairy tale.
All right. Very cool. Let's see. Lisa, your predictions.
Well, from little bit I know about the episode coming up, it looks like we're going to have some different characters coming together for, it's supposed to be Valentine's Day or something, in Storybrooke. So we'll get to see the interaction of Ashley and Emma and Mary Margaret and like a girls' night out, you know, and then the guys are there. And so I'm hoping that they're going to give us a little bit more character development for some of the Storybrooke characters. And I felt like the last couple episodes were just kind of rehashing the old, Regina's evil, Emma's trying to get her, you know.
Yeah, so something needs to happen.
See how they relate to each other and how maybe they can come together as a community.
I think that we'll hear more about perhaps Emma's part of the bargain that she had with, you know, the dealings. She Rumpelstiltskin, she owes him something, and perhaps we'll see a little bit more about that. Again, if they take the story of Beauty and the Beast, it's probably going to end in a different way than we expect, so... That wraps it up for this episode. Of course, we would love to hear your predictions and theories, and you can post them on our website, which is onceuponatime.sqpn.com. So onceuponatime.sqpn.com, and you can also let us know what you think about our show, but also about the new episodes or things that we might have missed and that you want to bring to our attention for a future episode via Twitter. And our Twitter account is called Once Upon a Time PC, and PC stands for podcast. If you enjoy this show and you want to bring it to the attention of fellow Oncers, other fans of Once Upon a Time, why don't you take a minute and write us a short review on iTunes? That is a great way to get this show up in the ratings on iTunes, and that is how a lot of new listeners have found us. And by the way, if you are a new listener, we hope you enjoy what we do, and if you want to check out our other shows that we produce over at the StarQuest Production Network, just head over to sqpn.com, and you will find a huge amount of podcasts and shows and series about all sorts of topics, and many of which also are in the same vein of what we do with Secrets of Once Upon a Time. If you're a fan of Harry Potter, you gotta listen to Secrets of Harry Potter. If you like, what else do we have? I always forget. If you're a fan of Pan Am, another ABC show, we've got a show about that as well, where we analyze the episodes with a real airline pilot and a flight attendant. So that's a lot of fun. And of course, we've got many more shows currently in production. And if you love fairy tales, make sure that you listen to Secrets of Disney, a show that I host with Deborah. And so a new episode, by the way, is coming very soon. I edited it yesterday, so it might be up tomorrow or today. I'm not sure. It's an analysis in detail of the movie Enchanted. So go check that out, disney.sqpn.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time on The Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.